You're listening to the Beauty Brain Show, where real scientists answer your beauty questions. And now, here's Randy and Perry.
Hello, I'm Perry Romanowski.
And I'm Randy Schuler.
And together, we are the Beauty Brains, a show where real scientists answer your beauty questions. On today's show, we have our beauty question extravaganza, where we answer some of the multitudinous beauty questions posed by real listeners all over the world. We really do have people all over the world.
That part is true, yes.
Some of the things you'll learn today will be whether there is a difference between facial wrinkles and creases, whether vitamin C causes sun sensitivity, and if shampoos with the same ingredient list are really the same.
Ooh, interesting.
But first up, Randy has put together a game for us.
Oh, wait, let's now, wait, hang on. We can't rush right into the game. We have to see if there's any, I don't know what this segment should be called, but it's something like Facial Deformities of Perry Romanowski. So, like, about a month ago, we talked about the episode where you almost cut off your nose with a chainsaw.
We did have that, yes.
And complete with a picture of your chainsaw scar, so we covered that. Just last week, we talked about how your right eye swelled up to the size of a tick, or pregnant tick, I believe was your exact quote, due to a bee sting while you were running the Chicago Marathon. By the way, this week it's looking much better.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I know the red pussiness is gone. So.
God. So, you know, so nothing, that's it? Nothing this week?
Well, no, you're right. Let's we do have to fill the show out with a little something. And you know, I saw this article published by a journal in New Zealand.
Hmm.
And the title was Six Beauty Bloggers Who Really Know Their Stuff.
Oh, so great. Well, I can't wait to see what number we are.
Yeah, I was really excited to open this up and see where they put us. And so, according to the article, they starts out, not all beauty bloggers are just in it for the freebies. These six are super knowledgeable and write posts that aren't only inspirational but informative too.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, well, we've got to be in here. We don't get it. We get almost no freebies. Certainly right. Not in it for that.
We're all about the infotainment. So we
super knowledgeable. Think of them as your own expert hair, makeup, and skincare team.
It's like that's us.
That was our runner-up to the ending tagline of the show, right? So, well, we got right here, we got Emily Weiss was on the list.
Mm-hmm.
She was an ex alumni of Vogue magazine.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with her material,
so
but
she has some publishing background, yeah.
Yeah.
Then there's Chantel Bester of the blog Not Another Poppy.
I have to admit, I'm not familiar with that one, but okay.
Do you even read beauty blogs? No wonder we're getting no traction on Instagram. All right. Then we have a two-person team here, Nikisha Brunson and Cipriana Kwan, the Urban Bush Babies.
Now that one I have. No, I'm thinking of something else. I've not heard of that one either.
Well, that's good. She covers everything from music to interior design, and just vaguely does beauty.
wait, but they're on the list?
They're number three and four.
Okay.
And number five is Zahara Bamji from CompleteDisbelief.com.
Okay. Skeptical blog, maybe?
She has a knack for covering everything from travel to fashion.
Does beauty science show up in any of these beauty blogs' repertoire?
Well, we have Michelle Phan.
Oh, yes.
She's popular for her YouTube channel, US Vlogger, and you can watch her tutorials. And that's the top six beauty bloggers, according to this New Zealand article.
Okay, I guess our criteria is a little different. Those are all fine blogs, I'm sure. And certainly if you're looking for tips on how to, you know, to apply blush or something, right? That's probably the way to go. But if you're looking for, you know, unbiased reporting on how products really work and why, I'm not sure those are the blogs that I would go to.
Exactly. So go there for inspiration. Come here for information.
That's a t-shirt. All right. Well, Perry, you teased it at the top of the show, so let's get to it. It is time to play Improbable Products.
All right, this is the game where I challenge Perry and a contestant from our listening audience to guess which is the fake beauty product story. Now, let me introduce today's contestant. It's Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, welcome to the Beauty Brain Show.
Thank you. This is
Hello, Mary Ellen.
This is going to be fun. Hi.
So where are you, Mary Ellen?
I am in Daytona Beach, Florida, where the weather happens to be beautiful today.
Oh, good for you. And before we get started, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
What is your biggest beauty problem?
My biggest beauty problem used to be that I had really oily, acne-prone skin. But that has resolved with age. So I guess I would say protecting myself from the sun.
Yeah,
that's a never-ending. I mean, it has to be just a constant effort.
Yeah,
not surprising
and a very important
Florida.
Yeah. Good point. All right, very good. Well, let's get to the game. I will read three beauty product stories. Two of them are true. One is made up. You guys have to guess the fake. Now, today's game has a theme, and that theme is beauty product blunders. So in these stories, people have inappropriately used a product to solve a beauty problem. All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go.
All right, number one. An Eastern European woman accidentally used spray insulation as a hair mousse. Number two. A Florida woman inadvertently used super glue as eye drops. And number three, an Australian man mistakenly used hemorrhoid cream as toothpaste. So which one of those is the fake? Mary Ellen, we'll start with you.
I think number two is the fake. I just can't imagine somebody accidentally using glue as eye drops. I mean,
it's
hope
so
that's
cringeworthy.
Oh, yes.
All right, Perry, what sayest thou?
Well, I mean, I agree. It sounds very cringeworthy to use super glue as your eye drops, but I could see how this would happen. Somebody, because a tube of super glue does look a little bit like an eyedropper, so I could see that happening. The hemorrhoid cream, I could also see that as an issue, too, because that product's going to be in your bathroom. It'll be in a tube. Somebody could be not looking and use the hemorrhoid cream. Although it does make me wonder, like, how did people find out about that? Did they use it and then they call up the company and say, I accidentally brushed my teeth with your hemorrhoid cream? I don't know. And then there is the spray insulation for hair mousse. I've never seen like a can of spray insulation. Maybe there's some holiday crafty thing that people would use. There's something not exactly right about that one. You probably made up the hemorrhoid cream, but I'm going to say, stick my fork into the ground, stake into the ground. The spray
Finally.
Insulation hair mousse is the fake one.
All right, very good. So let's go through the answers and see how we did. And we'll start with the spray insulation as mousse, because actually, Perry, that really happened.
Of course.
Yeah, this woman, this mystery woman, as the internet is describing her, applied a large quantity of hair mousse to her head before realizing what she had actually used was a canister of expanding builder's foam. I mean, if you've seen this stuff, you spray it in gaps in your walls and it expands to seal out water and temperature leaks, I guess.
That's good.
So you know, go ahead.
Maybe she has a point there, by accident, because in a thinned out amount, maybe it would seal the cracks of the cuticle of the hair and make it.
I like the way you think, Mary Ellen. Apparently, and there's an image of this woman sitting in the emergency room, which is pretty hilarious. And no one has quite explained how they managed to, chip this stuff off her head without, maybe they shaved her head. I don't know what they did. But anyway, it was quite a mess, apparently.
I would think that would be the remedy.
Yeah, that story is true. So now let's take a look at using super glue as eye drops, because, that actually did happen. This was reported on WPBF-TV, and the woman who had this problem says, quote, "Something blew into my eye, and I screamed for someone else to get eye drops out of my purse, and they brought super glue. As soon as I felt it in my eye, I felt it burn, and I closed my eye and screamed, call 911. So apparently, according to the 911 doctor, this isn't the first time this has happened. And while it is painful, the doctor said that the eye cells will slough off enough and loosen up the glue to reopen the eye. So, ouch.
Well, so she's going to be okay, huh?
She's going to be okay. And of course, you know, what all this means is that the Australian man using hemorrhoid cream as toothpaste is made up. I suppose maybe it could have happened at some time in some place, but I made it up for the purposes of today's game. So, wow, I stumped both you guys.
Things like, yes, you did. Things like that have happened, though, because I work in the field of rehabilitation with people, mm-hmm. or did work in the field of rehabilitation where people lose their vision for whatever reasons and need to learn to how to relive their lives and all. And people have picked up some pretty strange tubes of things we've used it for toothpaste.
Wow. Well, hopefully they're okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, Mary Ellen, thank you for playing today's game.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. And I love your show.
I tell you, I love having the guest contestants on the show. I think that's so cool that we started that.
Yeah, I enjoy it too. It makes me look a little less foolish, I think.
Well, maybe.
Although Chance is still pretty tough.
So if you guys enjoy this as a feature, please reach out to us at thebeautybrains@gmail.com. Just drop us a note or you know, tweet us or mention it to us in a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll set it up so you too can be a contestant on the show. We've got plenty of spots open, so let us know.
And all you need is a phone and an email address.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you. Well, Perry, we've got some questions that we want to answer this week, so I think we should move on to that. And,
yeah, why don't you take the first one?
Yeah, I'll take the first one. It's an audio question, and this one comes to us from Dawn.
Hi, my name is Dawn. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, and I have a question about Rodin and Fields. I have a friend that wants me to become a consultant with them, and she's always posting pictures of before and afters and kind of tries to make it seem like it's this miracle product. And I just wonder, I mean, is it really a miracle, or is it, I realize it's part of their marketing plan, but is there anything that makes Rodin and Fields different from any other skincare line that you use with, you know, that you use consistently? I just want to know. Thanks.
Thanks for that question, Dawn. And, you know, as regular listeners of the program, I think can already guess, if you ask us if a product is truly a miracle, the answer is going to be no. Now, if you're asking, is there anything about the Rodin and Fields line that differentiates it from other lines, then I think the answer may be yes. So I took a look at a couple of their products. And by the way, Dawn also sent me an email in addition to the vocal question you just heard. So she asked about a couple of products in particular. So I reviewed the ingredients in several of these products, and the first thing that struck me is that Rodin and Fields doesn't appear to have any technology that's not available in other products. In other words, I don't see anything here that's patented or proprietary.
Right.
But having said that, they do appear to use ingredients that are somewhat less common. So let me give you a couple of examples. For example, in their Unblemish Acne Wash, the active ingredient is sulfur as opposed to salicylic acid, which is typically what you would see used in a, you know, in a regular drugstore brand acne wash, for example. Now, both sulfur and salicylic acid are approved OTC actives, but you don't see sulfur used very commonly. And,
right.
You know, the trick with acne actives is that some work better on some people more than others. So if you've tried, you know, the big three are benzoyl peroxide, salicylic acid, and sulfur. So if you've tried a salicylic acid wash, because generally the benzoyl peroxide is in a leave-on cream. So if you tried sal acid in a wash and you didn't like the results you got, then I would say, yeah, try a sulfur-based product. So you may see some benefit from this Rodin and Fields product that you wouldn't see from something you might just pick up on your drugstore shelves. Now, having said that, you can find sulfur in other products too if you look around. So that's the first one. Then they have a toner where they use lactobionic acid and gluconolactone. Now, both of those can be found in other products, but they're not frequently used, and even less frequently used in combination. So, not that I'm a big fan of toners, but if you're looking for a toner that's based on some different technology, yeah, I think this one would qualify. And then thirdly, there's their Redefine line, and they use tetrapeptide 21. Now, peptides, we did a whole show on peptides, and there is some evidence that they have anti-aging properties. You don't frequently see tetrapeptide 21 used as much as you would some of the other peptides. But again, it's nothing that's exclusive to this company. So,
yeah.
I mean, it appears to me that they do use some rather interesting formulation approaches that you won't find in many other products, especially many other less expensive lines. Now, you know, that just because they use some different actives, that doesn't guarantee that they will work any better. And it doesn't mean the products are worth, you know, a higher price. But if you're the kind of person who wants to, you know, go off the beaten path a little bit and you want to try some different actives and you don't mind spending a little extra money, then this might be a brand for you to try.
Yeah, and they have good scientists over there doing formulations. And so if you want to check them out, you know, just go to their website. They claim dermatologists produced. You know, it's mostly dermatologists kind of approve it, but they have scientists who do it. But,
sure.
You know, they produce decent products, so go check it out.
All right.
All right, Randy, I know we teased this in the beginning. We had a question from one of our overseas listeners.
Yes.
Natalie asks, here in France, a lot of people think that vitamin C is photosensitizing and are scared to use it under the sunlight. Have you ever seen a publication on this side effect of vitamin C?
Hmm.
It's a good question. Does vitamin C cause sun sensitivity? Well, I looked. We looked. Our crack research team here at the Beauty Brains looked. And, you know, I can't find any proof of that.
Yeah.
It's true that if you ingest a lot of vitamin C, it can interfere with the absorption of vitamin B, mm-hmm. B vitamins.
Yeah.
That help protect your skin from the sun. And it's also true that citrus fruits, which also contain vitamin C, can increase sun sensitivity. But it's the components in the citrus oil that are causing the problem, not necessarily the vitamin C.
Yeah.
So as far as I've been able to determine, you don't have to worry about vitamin C causing sun sensitivity.
But you could see how this kind of notion would take hold, right? So if somebody, I mean, you just gave two great examples of facts related to vitamin C, right? We
right.
know, or at least related to citrus products. And yeah, citrus oils are well known for causing irritation.
Right.
Do you remember that story? I don't remember if we talked about this on the show, but I remember reading this years ago. It was somehow a study linked to spring breakers in Cancun, if I remember correctly. And they would do body shots, do you know, where they would put you take the lime, a slice of lime, and you would put it on some body part of yours, either up on your shoulder, on your thigh,
is
or whatever.
Is this the slippery nipple? Is that
no? That's I think that's no, a totally sorry, different sorry. Drink.
Oh, sorry.
No, this it's a body shot. You put the lime right. on your skin.
So it's a tequila body shot,
right? And then I forget if you do the salt, and then somehow you do the shooter, whatever. But the point is, you have the lime in contact with your skin. And because this was in Cancun during spring break, the college kids were getting out these skin eruptions, outbreaks on their skin,
right.
irritation. And they found out it was because the citrus oil and the lime were causing photosensitivity and they were getting irritation. So there's an example, right, where you can hear, oh, gee, vitamin C must be bad under sunlight because I
right.
read that story about, you know, spring breakers. Well, guess what? It wasn't the vitamin C per se, it was the other components in the citrus oil. So I could see how Natalie and her French friends would get that impression, but it doesn't seem like there's anything to worry about if you're just using vitamin C.
Right. Sometimes the science is a bit different than the pop culture.
There you go. And that's why we're here.
Exactly.
All right. Here's a sort of a misconception I wanted to spell. I'm not sure if it is or not, but this question comes to us from Jane S., who asked, can you clarify what would be a facial crease as opposed to a wrinkle?
Incidentally, this reminds me of why we like people to record their voices and send in the questions.
What?
Otherwise, you just listen to the two dudes read someone else's question.
Well, or worse than that, you use some fake voice that you come up with, which is always disturbing. But anyway, yeah, so please send us your questions in audio form. So anyway, Jane, I'm not sure there's a clear answer to that, but let me try and explain. So my understanding is that The term wrinkle is used to describe a line or really any other disturbance in the smoothness of the skin. Now, that could be caused by factors which lead to the collapse of collagen and elastin, so the skin kind of folds in on itself, and, you know, things like smoking, UV exposure, dryness, et cetera, right? Those things all cause wrinkles. We've talked about that before in the show. Now, crease is a more specific term, and that's typically used to describe a deeper line that's most often caused by some external force, like, you know, you're sleeping on a pillow and you wake up in the morning and you have a crease in your face, albeit right, perhaps a temporary crease, but you would have a crease in your face from that. Or you can have a crease caused by an internal force, like the repeated contraction of facial muscles. So if you look at the furrows in your forehead or some of the deeper facial lines that happen where your skin sort of bends repeatedly.
It's like why my jaw looks like I'm a marionette.
Yeah, I know, the puppet lines. Don't make that facial expression ever again.
Boy, if we were on Periscope, this would be highly interesting.
Oh, I get it. Periscope, that's what you'd call it.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's how I've always looked at the difference between the two. Now, this seems consistent with language used by the American Academy of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, because on their website they talk about prominent forehead creases, brow furrows, or eye lines such as crow's feet that are produced by specific facial expression muscles repeatedly creasing the skin. So that sounds pretty much what I just said. And then they talk about, you know, you can use injectable fillers to treat, quote, deeper creases and folds that are not due to muscle activity. So again, saying that these things can have a couple of causes. So I think, though, in reality, it's probably just a question of degree. If it's just a small wrinkle, it's a wrinkle. If it's deeper and more pronounced, you call it a crease. But I'm not sure anybody has, a deeper differentiation than that.
Right. And I think as far as beauty products go, you'd use the same sort of technology.
Yeah,
that's
actually a very good point.
Yeah. All right. That brings us to our next question from Beth. Beth asks, within the past year or more, I have been under the impression that jar packaging should be avoided altogether. Is it worth the money to invest in products with jar packaging for hygienic purposes as well as product integrity? All right. Well, there are really two basic problems with jar packaging. The first potential issue is that an open-mouthed jar can increase exposure to bacterial contamination, you know, because, you know, you're dipping your fingers into it, more of it's open to the air.
Yeah.
And, you know, bacterial contamination in your product is never a good thing. I can't think of any time it would be good.
Well, the products are preserved, but at some point you can overwhelm a preservative system if it's, you know, if the bacterial load is too high, the preservative system kind of craps out.
Exactly. And then second, the open mouthiness of the jar exposes the product to oxygen and to light, which can also hasten oxidation, and it can break down stability more quickly.
Yeah.
If the product is a simple moisturizer, this probably won't make too much of a difference.
Right.
But if the product contains antioxidants, which are, you know, typically found in more expensive products, then those active ingredients may be broken down or used up before you even apply them to your face. Also, if your product contains a fragrance, the more volatile components of that fragrance will be more likely to leave the jar, and so what you're left at over time is a more flat or duller smelling product. So, you know, I would say certainly avoid jar packaging for your expensive antioxidant-based anti-aging creams, but for most products that you buy at your local Target or Walmart, it's probably not that much of a problem that you'll notice.
Yeah, I mean, if you're spending a ton of money on something, which, by the way, you probably shouldn't be spending a ton of money on these products, but if you do, just protect them by, you know, using non-jar packaging, and most of the higher-end lines have pumps or, you know, some other, you know, sealed dispensing system where you're not constantly dipping your fingers in and exposing the product to air and light. That's just, as a general rule, is never going to help things. So
exactly.
Fair enough. All right. And here's kind of a similar question. This one comes to us from Daniela. And she said that she found on the web some do-it-yourself recipes to make your own foaming hand soap using an empty foaming dispenser and diluted liquid hand soap or body wash. And she was first rejoicing about that idea, but wondered if there's any negatives to it. She says, for example, is there any risk to diluting a hand soap with tap water, say one part liquid soap with three parts water, You know, could that go bad because there aren't enough preservatives? Or more importantly, is the washing potential lessened? So she wants to hear our opinion as cosmetic chemists. Would we have a peace of mind using a do-it-yourself foam soap like that? Well, Daniela, you're exactly right. There are issues here. Certainly, you can overwhelm the preservative system by diluting it, which we just sort of referred to that. And there are issues with diluting the washing capability. So, you know, especially if you're diluting a finished product three or fourfold, you're going to seriously compromise the preservative system. That's no question about that. Now, granted, there's less of a risk of contamination with this type of product because the pump dispenser doesn't allow much contact with the outside world. However, bacteria love to feed on the types of fatty surfactants used in these cleansers. And really, it's only a matter of time before some bacteria growth takes hold. You know, I use a foaming hand soap in, you know, my bathroom counter. And I refill the container just from a concentrate. So I'm not mixing my own. I just buy the pre-made concentrate. But after I read this question, I looked closely at my soap dispenser. And I noticed this pump that I've been using for quite a while now has actually got a little bit of bacterial buildup right around the head of it. So that's not with diluting the product. That's just using the same container again, and I've noticed a problem. So this is something serious to worry about.
Right. Now, those bacteria are tenacious in their ability to grow, right?
Well, exactly. And once they do sort of take hold like that, you've really got a problem because it's easy for a biofilm to build up in the internal mechanism of the pump head. And I think that's what happened in my case. And a biofilm is, you know, think of layers and layers and layers of bacteria, which once they grow to a certain point, they're extremely difficult to wash away.
Right.
So anyway, I think that's the problem I've had. Now, cleansing power is a secondary concern, as Danielle said. Now, you know, when formulated professionally, foaming cleansers are not just diluted versions of liquid soaps. That's not how it works. Both foaming cleansers and liquid soaps have approximately the same surfactant concentration. And that's going to range somewhere between 10 to 15% on an active basis. So the big difference is it's in the type of surfactant chosen, because, you know, the amount and quality of foam that you want generated through the pump head, you know, you can make the foam better or worse through your surfactant choice. Mm-hmm. And also, you need to use a surfactant choice that doesn't build up a lot of viscosity because you want it to be easy to pump. So just because the product is a almost water-thin liquid, that doesn't mean it's low in surfactant concentration. So just diluting another product isn't really a good solution. So you're diluting it down, as she described, to approximately 4% as compared to, say, 10 or 15%. And that's really going to be a problem with the less expensive brands of hand soap. You could be getting down as low as, you know, 3%. Right. So at that point, yeah, it's not going to foam and cleanse as well. So I guess the bottom line here is, you know, yeah, you can make your own foaming cleanser, but why would you bother? You're only saving a couple of dollars. These are not expensive high-end products. Right. And you're giving yourself a product that's A, prone to bacterial contamination, and B, doesn't have as much cleansing power.
Right. No great reason to do it. Although this question did remind me of that first great idea I had when I started at Alberto Culver.
What was that?
It was called the shampoo extender.
Okay.
That was when I, like, this is what I used to do when I was in college. I'd take my shampoo, I'd use half of it, and then I'd fill the rest up with water.
Okay.
Shake it up, and now I've got a new jar, new bottle, right?
What could go wrong?
Of course, that's diluting out the surfactant, the preservative, and all those other, and it's really thin too, and so you probably use more. But then I discovered that the salt curve, right? If you add salts to an anionic system, that will help actually thicken it up again.
Right.
And so the idea was you sell this little packet of salt, and you have extra preservative in there. So when you dilute down your shampoo, you pour in the salt and preservative, dilute it back up, it thickens it up, it keeps the preservative there, and you get more shampoo out of one bottle.
That is clever. And I think that would work, you know, probably better on some brands than others, because some brands are going to be formulated with an excess of surfactant. So if you dilute it down a little bit, you're not going to miss too much. If you're looking at a value brand that's already sort of formulated to be as cheap as possible, guess what?
Right.
They've already stripped that down to the bare minimum. If you dilute that down, you're probably going to get to the point where it won't, you know, work so well.
Right.
So.
And it's not surprising that when I pitched that to the VO5 marketing team, they weren't big fans of it. All right, Randy. Well, it looks like we have time for one more question. And this one comes from Mandy. Mm. Mandy asks, the ingredients listing for these two shampoos are almost exactly the same. So my question is, are the different grade? Are there different grades of ingredients? Are there more concentrated levels of one ingredient in one product versus the other? And why are these formulas so similar? I know they are both owned by L'Oreal, but could there actually be a difference between the two? And we'll list the ingredients in the show notes. Mm-hmm. So we have the Biolage Color Lash Shampoo mm-hmm. and the Garnier Fructis Color Shield Shampoo.
Right.
Well, Mandy, welcome to the wonderful world of hair care marketing. You know, based on reviewing these ingredient lists, I don't see any functional difference between these two products. The extracts, fragrance, and color are different, but that's about it.
Yeah.
The idea of different grades of surfactants, this is really just a myth.
Oh my God, that comes up.
You know, for the most part.
Yeah, that comes up all the time. Like we've read that, this salon product uses, dimethicone, but it uses a better grade of dimethicone than this drugstore brand. And let me tell you, people, we have worked for companies who formulate both salon products and mass market products. And we have worked very closely with the suppliers who sell those ingredients to both salon companies and, you know, drugstore companies. There are no different grades. There are different types of surfactants, or not different types of ingredients. So you may use a silicone that's been designed to, it's cationically modified, so it sticks to hair through rinsing, so it gives you better conditioning. So there are differences across different ingredients. But if you're seeing dimethicone listed, it's likely to be the same.
Yeah. The different grades of dimethicone are just the viscosity of it, and that's only relevant to the person making the formula and how easy it is to work with the ingredient, not how it's going to perform.
Yeah. Now, of course, that's the simple view. If you do get into, different molecular weights, you can get different deposition. But, there may be some exceptions to that rule. But the vast majority of cases, especially with the ingredient list that she listed here, there aren't going to be differences.
There really aren't differences. That's a silicone ingredient, but there aren't differences in surfactants.
Right.
If one surfactant calls itself sodium lauryl sulfate, there is not a high end sodium lauryl sulfate.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the same, So it's really common for companies to leverage formulas bases across multiple brands. So to me, it's not really surprising at all that these two brands owned by the same company have pretty much the same formula list.
Yeah.
And as far as which one should you buy? Well, the Biolage one costs about 68 cents per ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And the Garnier one costs about 25 cents an ounce. And of course, that's depending on where you buy and what size you buy, where you shop.
Yeah.
But either way, Biolage is like three times as expensive for pretty much exactly the same thing. So unless you love the Biolage fragrance and bottle that much more, you should probably go with the Fructis product.
Yeah, save yourself some bucks. Or at the very least, try both and see if you feel a difference, because maybe there's something there that, you like better. I don't know what it would be. But
there could be some subtle difference that, impacts you, but I don't know what it would be.
It seems unlikely. All right. Very good. Well, Perry, that's we've blown through our questions for the day, so we're at the end of another show.
Yeah, well, that was good. Hey, you forgot to ask me about what my latest book it is that I'm reading.
So, Perry, have you been reading anything lately?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Randy. I really enjoy reading books while I'm exercising or working out or doing housework, which on occasion I'll do when the cleaning lady doesn't show up. But recently, I've been listening to a book by Dan Ariely. It's called The Honest Truth About Dishonesty.
Hmm.
And it's relevant for cosmetic products because, people always claim that cosmetic companies are lying to you. Well, it turns out if you read this book, it turns out pretty much everybody lies.
Startling.
The way that you lie is you only lie enough where you don't feel bad about yourself for the amount that you lie.
Okay.
And there's some great examples in there. Like they had these volunteers who worked at a museum gift shop,
mm-hmm.
and they were losing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And they found out that one of the managers, at the end of the shift, he would take like $60 home. They fired him, and they were still losing like $80,000 a year.
Hmm.
And it turns out that all of the volunteers who worked there, they were all skimping money too, just a few bucks here and there. When they implemented the idea of having to write down every transaction, voila, all of the cheating went away. So everybody has that potential to cheat, according to this book. And you know what else everyone has the potential to do?
I don't know. I'm just so depressed over that story. I don't know how to go on, but okay.
They have the potential to listen to their own, very own audio book and help the beauty brains at the same time. So sign up. To do this, you can sign up with Audible using the link audibletrial.com/beautybrains. And there you can download a free audiobook for a 30-day trial and support the show. And if you're unsatisfied after 30 days, you can cancel it. So this helps us out. It keeps the show free, and it keeps us inspired to keep answering your beauty questions.
Ah, excellent. Thanks, Perry. All right, well, that brings us to the end of another great show. So thank you, Perry, for providing answers to all the questions. And
thank you, Randy.
Thanks to all our...
for that fabulous game.
And thanks to all our great listeners. Remember, send us an email at thebeautybrains@gmail.com if you want to play along next time. And until next time, remember, everybody, be brainy about your beauty.
Nobody makes a lather like Foamy. So moist, so rich, so creamy.